Governor Joe Rustavelli Avenue. This is KabilPod.com. The week in Georgia in English, coming to you from our studios high atop Rustavelli Avenue, as we just mentioned, which is lovely. Today is Thursday, the 20th of June, 2013. On this date, in 1214, the University of Oxford receives its charter. In 1789, Third Estate makes the tennis court oath in France. 1837, Queen Victoria succeeds to the British throne. In 1900, the Boxer Rebellion begins in China. 1947, Bugsy Siegel, mobster and inventor of Las Vegas, is killed. 1963, the hotline, or red phone, is established between the U.S. and USSR. 1979, ABC News correspondent Bill Stewart is caught on tape being shot dead by a Nicaraguan soldier under the Somoza regime, leading fairly directly to the end of that regime. And in 2009, during the Iranian election protest, the death of Neda Agha Sultan is captured on video and spreads virally on the internet, making it the most widely witnessed death in human history. Birthdays today are Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys, Chet Atkins of The Guitar, actor John Goodman, Texas war hero Audie Murphy, and actor slut Errol Flynn. David Sadegashvili, famous entrepreneur and public man, doctor of chemistry and philosophy, died on this date in 1911. We are Matthias Hooter and Mark Mullen. Nothing we say can be connected with any of our employers, past, present, or future. Please send this link to friends and CC us at tabilpod@gmail.com when you do. And whoever sends the most emails will be eligible to win a fabulous prize, to be specified later, but fabulous nonetheless. Thanks again for those posting to our forum interesting comments on Offshore Havens by Simon. To comment or ask us for an opinion or follow a topic, go to tabilpod.com or send us an email. My Georgian Journal and Fides Politra column this week is about the elections in Iran. How it could possibly lead to a nuke deal or other changes in Iran's very important relations with the region and the world, and this could have great importance for Georgia. So for those Georgians looking around for a fourth language to study, you could do worse than Persian. On the 17th of June, Interior Ministry spokeswoman Nino Girgobiani stated that investigations found caches filled with weapons, explosive drugs, and documents indicating that these were to be used against Misha's enemies. The caches were found buried in barrels in San Magrelo. Girgobiani said that they contained photos and documents about people UNM planned to arrest if they had won last year's parliamentary elections. Girgobiani said videos were also found showing law enforcers sexually abusing individuals who she did not name. The Minister of Internal Affairs, Irakli Kharabashvili, met with foreign diplomats to introduce the tapes. The meeting was closed to the media. About 50 representatives of the diplomatic corps, including ambassadors from the EU, Holland, Italy, and Latvia, attended the meeting. The diplomats left without making any comment. Yesterday, on the 19th of June, the Ministry of Internal Affairs detained 9 people in connection with the cache. One of the detainees is a former employee of the Defense Ministry. 2 others are cops.
Yeah, basically the videos in there that show the torture and sexual abuse of men, apparently that basically it was a forced confession of these people that they committed terrorist acts. So apparently that's what is at least on one of the videos that was found. And it's very, very upsetting and brutal stuff. And it's not really clear who hid everything there at this point, I think, who created this hidden stash of drugs and arms and all this material, and for what purpose. But
well, I mean, I think somebody, I can't remember who it was, said that, look, yes, the previous government had a policy, and I remember Alassania talking about this during the campaign, that there were these militias, and,
right,
you know, the fever pitch of paranoia had gotten pretty serious, but I think the former government had a policy of, we're going to arm people and, you know, have caches of, I don't know, Kalashnikovs for a partisan war if Russia invades. The whole program was not really done particularly well. I mean, look, you know, the Swiss have got guns all over the place, and,
right,
you know, okay, I mean, it's a thing that, you know, the countries do, but there's a way to do it, and this is not, yeah, the way to do it.
And these were better RPGs. I mean, these were, like, things that you use to take out cars and hand grenades, and then, yeah, and a few Kalashnikovs, but it's not really, I don't know, it's something,
yeah, so,
for insurgency, but
Yeah, so then there's a question, was that politically motivated? The question I have is about these lists of enemies and, you know, videos, like, in there, it doesn't really make much sense. I mean, I understand the arms caches, and I think, you know, I think people sort of already knew that that was going on. Alassani had talked about that even before the election, but out in San Migrelo. But I don't know. I think, the lists seem a little ridiculous. I mean, also, like, this, you know, this is coming right after the jihad video, which there was much talk about, you know, who did this, and there was a story that it was Gheorghe Arvaladze, that was talking about Kantiashvili and whatever else, and all of this is just, that conversation has ended, has stopped. And it seems to me, looking at all these allegations that are floating around, that if they knew that it was somebody connected with the national movement who had made that jihad video, and since everybody seems to agree that it came from Georgia, that person would have been prosecuted.
Yeah.
So that the fact that, you know, all of a sudden there's radio silence about that.
Well, last night the Minister of Interior spoke about the video and said that he believes it might come from somebody within the Ministry of Interior or who knows the technological capabilities of the Ministry of Interior, because apparently the IP address that was used to upload it to YouTube might not be the actual person's IP address, so they use the VPN. This is something that is not that sophisticated. I use it every day. I don't know the Ministry of Interior's, you know, tech.
Well, sure, that's what you're saying now. Right. Yes.
They say they don't know where it came
Austria
from.
Did start two world wars, it must be admitted, you know. So
yeah, we've calmed down a little.
That's true. Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, on the 14th of June, Tbilisi City Court delivered its verdict on those implicated in the September prison abuse scandal, which shocked Georgians with videos of mistreatment of prisoners just ahead of the parliamentary elections. 17 former prison officials, many of them arrested shortly after the videos emerged, stood trial on charges of torture and inhumane treatment of prisoners in Guldani prison in Tbilisi. 16 of the 17 accused were sentenced to prison terms varying in length from 6 months to 6 years. One of the 17, Vladimir Bedukadze, avoided punishment after cooperating with prosecutors. Bedukadze, former prison guard, admitted that he filmed the now infamous videos. When the videos were released, Bedukadze was in Belgium, but he returned to Georgia after the parliamentary elections. He was detained but released on 2,000 lari bail pending trial. Tbilisi City Court said that, quote, although a crime had been committed by Vladimir Bedukadze, upon a motion from the Georgian chief prosecutor, Archil Kvilashvili, he has been relieved of criminal responsibility on the basis of plea bargaining arrangement on special cooperation, end quote. The hardest working NGO in the Caucasus, Transparency International Georgia, released a statement saying that freeing Bedukadze completely from criminal responsibility is unacceptable.
That's also, I'm not a lawyer, but apparently that is a practice in international law, that if you're accused of torture, you can't just, like, walk free without any punishment. You can, if this guy's a whistleblower, then it would be appropriate to give him a lower sentence, but just freeing him from any punishment is apparently against international practice. And also there was criticism.
The international best practice or treaty obligations by Georgia?
I'm not sure what, right. You know, like how the European Court of Human Rights has ruled on that.
An interesting question if there are any lawyers out there listening.
But also Eka Bezelia and some other Georgian Dream people came out and also criticized that move.
Yeah.
So there's criticism from within the ruling party.
The former government abused this so-called plea bargaining system, which really, I mean, as it was used, had nothing to do with plea bargaining as used in the United States, which Europeans don't even like the American system particularly much. But, for them to use it in this way, in this particular circumstance, and in a case that was clearly to their political advantage before the elections, seems to, I don't know, be a little bit partial,
right.
You know.
And the other aspect is that, of course, the chief prosecutor in Georgia is a very political office. It's not this, that the prosecution is completely independent from the ruling party or the government. There are very close links.
Right. The Revenue Service launched a call center that will provide basic information on tax and customs responsibilities and procedures to taxpayers. The call center service is provided free of charge. Their working hours are from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday to Friday. Number for the service is country code 995-322-299-299. So that number again is 2, is the code, and then 299-299. It's got 20 people on staff, 15 of them are for tax, 5 related to customs. Any listeners who use it, let us know how it goes and what you think. The Abkhaz authorities launched a census in Gali District at the same time the government in Suchumi has completely stopped issuing Abkhaz passports, citing the discovery of fake ones. According to the locals, as early as August 1st, once the census is over, they will be people will be issued Russian passports instead of Abkhazian ones. Another issue is the restrictions on free movement. According to locals, despite 2 border checkpoints opening on the Gali-Zugdidi administrative boundary, people are still unable to cross into Zugdidi without problems. One problem is that people have to pay money for taking goods across the border. According to locals, the Abkhaz charge only 5 lari for a small bag, provided they are carrying only essential items. However, if you wish to take food or domestic items from Zugdidi to Gali, then you have to pay 30 to 50 lari. It is unclear if this is a bribe or a customs-free fee. This is a very good article, by the way, only in Georgian, but it's in Resonanci. There's got a lot of specifics on how the border crossing works, according to locals. Public defender Uchen Anuashvili stated that a video and audio recordings of the private lives of public figures will be destroyed on the 21st of June at 3 p.m. 23rd of June at 3 p.m. in front of the media. Nanuashvili stated that there are 54 discs of video recordings with more than 12,800 files. According to him, the videos include talks between political leaders, media representatives, and clergymen.
And they also, I mean, there's also a bunch of secretly recorded sex tapes of a lot of people of public life. That is, I think, the key part. Yes, there are also the talks between political leaders and stuff like that, but that is a little bit less sensitive because it probably won't destroy somebody's, you know, personal life and professional career.
Well, I don't know. Although the tapes that were released of Guba Sanakidze and Alassania before the elections and the comments they made, I suspect did not help them in their political careers. I mean, it was not used for blackmail, but.
Well, it was. Still, all the stuff was published randomly by some anonymous sources.
Anonymous source, exactly. Well, that's an interesting question. What happens when these things just show up? Like, what, you know, who gets in trouble? Does Garibashvili automatically offer to resign if all of a sudden these things weren't destroyed? Because call me crazy, I'm guessing somebody's got these in their lower drawer somewhere.
Well, they also said, you can't prove who has copies. And
right.
I think they've also hinted that they believe that the previous Ministry of Interior officials took off with a few USB sticks full of data.
I can imagine.
So it's going to be very messy if ahead of the presidential elections, all of a sudden, some YouTube posters show up.
And, right. The Venice Commission published a joint opinion on the draft on the temporary state commission regarding miscarriages of justice in Georgia during the plenary session, June 14th to 15th. The document states, in its opinion, quote, in its opinion on the provisions relating to the political prisoners in the amnesty law of Georgia, the Venice Commission concludes that the amnesty law failed to comply with fundamental principles of the rule of law, namely legality, including transparency, the prohibition of arbitrariness, non-discrimination, and equality before the law, end quote. Parliamentary Minority Leader Dato Bakradze said that UNM will determine a candidate for the presidency by intra-party voting, which will begin at the end of June and will last a month. Tbilisi Mayor Gigi Ugulava stated he does not intend to participate in the presidential elections.
But I don't think they have specified how they're going to do the primaries, or do you know anything about that?
I have not heard, and I also don't know the size of the membership of the party. Another member of the Tbilisi City Council, Kaja Guruli, left the UNM faction. Guruli intends to be an independent MP for Samgori region. The national movement has 24 people in the city assembly, and so still maintains a slim majority. There are 23 in the opposition, including 2 independent and 4 in their own faction.
It would be interesting to understand what the compensation is, maybe at this point, for somebody to leave the Just which parties or, you know, are there any incentives created?
Official or unofficial?
Well, unofficial.
Yeah, I can imagine there might be some. But who knows? We have no proof of that. No reason not to mention it here on the show, but, just speculation. I do think that in Parliament, there was lots of talk of, Bidzina's going to buy off gazillions of people and, and this and that. But my sense is that that's not really happening, that there's, with the majoritarians, it was a lot of them had run, the National Movement majoritarians had run, didn't really want to run anyway, but right. Had sort of been coerced into it.
And it makes their life easier to be on the winning side.
Right, for sure. And I think that somebody might be pushing an open door. On the other hand, a lot of the list candidates, they were voting with Otsneba just because they were a little bit annoyed that the UNM parliamentary leadership outside of parliament was sort of telling them what to do and trying to, push around their negotiations and this and that. Misha's spokesperson, Manamanj Galadze, stated that the head of the EU monitoring mission, Georgia, from Poland, with a long name and lots of consonants, finished his mission ahead of time because of the government's supposed lack of a principled position towards the occupied territories. Which I find highly unlikely. The EU's monitoring mission didn't confirm Manj Galadze's statement and said that he finished his two-year term and so was leaving. On the 18th of June, Misha received the ambassador's presidential residency and awarded him the Order of Honor.
Yeah, he's a Polish, I think, retired army general or something like that. And it's always very political because he's Polish, so, he's kind of leaving, so the question is who gets the next position or what do the Poles get in exchange for that?
Right, yeah, of course.
So
Well, yeah, he was not particularly high profile. I don't know much about him.
He was basically the contrary of high profile. I don't
right,
know.
Like, yeah, so he's
hardly ever seen speaking in public or
anywhere. It would be nice to hear a little bit more out of the EU MM sometimes. They've got all sorts of information, and those go to member states and not to, the great unwashed, the hoi polloi, that is Tpilpub.com and the rest of the public of Georgia, but still, let us know what's going on out there. Levan Murisidze was elected Secretary of the High Council of Justice at the Judges' Conference with a total of 205 votes. 222 out of 224 judges participated. Before the vote, judges Ilona Todua, Pata Saginolidze, Gheorghe Shavliashvili, and Tamar Alania withdrew their candidacies in favor of Murisidze. So he was the only candidate. Unofficially, all these candidates support Chief Justice Kote Kubulashvili, and this was a joint decision made among them a number of days before the actual vote. On the 15th of June, the parliament elected just four members to the High Council of Justice, Vakhtang Tordia Gocha, Mamulashvili, Eva Gotseridze, and Anna Sopromadze. According to the parliamentary speaker, Tatu Zubashvili, another competition will be announced to elect the remaining two members. Defense Minister Irakli Alasania released a statement on Facebook saying that each family of a fallen Georgian soldier will get 100,000 lari instead of 15,000 lari. Prison Minister Sosar Subadi stated that Secretary General of UNM Anna Merabashvili, who is in a pretrial detention facility, will be provided with a TV set in the near future. Merabashvili's lawyer, Gheorghe Chiviashvili, stated that his defendant was on a hunger strike. One of his demands was a TV set. Let us remind listeners that he is still the Secretary General of the main opposition party and is, according to the law, innocent. So this no TV rule they have had for several weeks seems somewhat punitive,
Yeah, and also, have you heard anything? I read that Sosar Subadi said he wants to resign, something like that.
I don't know.
Quoted saying that.
No. Wait, did Vano or did Sosar want to resign?
I think Sosar was quoted as saying, I will not resign.
Could be. I don't know. I haven't heard enough. On the 15th of June, two foreign citizens, I think of Chechens, Mikhail Khadiev and Rizvan Omarov, were detained and charged with illegally purchasing weapons and explosives. Police suspect they were preparing to carry out an act of terrorism. The Interior Ministry stated that police searched their domicile and found explosives, electric detonators, firearms, ammunition, and fake identity papers. Khadiev was wanted by Interpol and, according to the investigation, has been hiding in Georgia since 2011. The investigation is still looking into connections between the two, who they were working for, and whether they had any accomplices. On the 14th of June, representatives of the press service of the Interior Ministry, Nino Girgobiani, stated that Khadirov and Omarov lived in Misha's pilot, Zaur Kortashidze's house. Kortashidze responded to the accusation, saying that the detainees were distant acquaintances who never lived in his house. Kortashidze said that Khadirov was trained in the Palavani Club, where Deputy Rector of the Police Academy, Luka Kortsunidze, and some other wrestlers trained.
But it's not really clear what these guys were allegedly up to. Yeah? The nature of their planned terrorist attacks. I mean, there's a strong Russia connection, but I'm not really clear what.
Right, yeah, well, there's one of the things to read this week that we'll remember is something by Yulia Latinova in that talks a little bit about the sort of Putin and Russia's in general, you know, preoccupation with allegations of terrorists harbored in Georgia, and what that could mean for Sochi. By the way, okay, the investigation service of the Ministry of Finance arrested the deputy governor of the Dmanisi municipality and a member of the local self-government Sakrobulo in Kamokardli. According to the investigation, Arif Suleimanov and Zurab Akopashvili gave 200 hectares of state-owned land to a citizen in exchange for a 5,000 lari bribe. The detainees faced between 7 and 11 years in prison. Following up on last week's story about the Agriculture Ministry's loans program, last week we said that the ministry reported a total of 5 million lari in loans to 25 beneficiaries, as well as 13 million more lari in requested funds from 35 applicants. While the ministry's website does have information about the loans, you really have to search through the website's archives to dig it out. In addition, they don't give any information about who qualified for which loans, the number of applicants filed within each of the three components of the program, nor the number of applications, number of loans granted. The ministry should make the complete information available to the public on its front page, because there's a real corruption risk unless potential borrowers can easily access the information. Even more important is distributing leaflets to farmers about the program's existence. We don't know how many leaflets the ministry has distributed and what locations they've covered. We'll inquire and get back to you. The Justice Ministry stated that about 24,000 Georgians illegally possess a second citizenship. Citizens who obtain dual citizenship without notifying the authorities could be stripped of their Georgian citizenship. The ministry urges these individuals to apply for dual Georgian citizenship. What they should do is just say Georgians can be dual citizens. I mean, there's a lot of talk about this whole, you know, citizenship situation right now, and it's a little bit ridiculous. It used to be that under Shevardnadze there was no dual citizenship. Then they changed it when they were amending the Constitution over about 48 hours in early February 2004 and said you can be dual citizens. That was when Misha wanted to bring in Bendukidze and Salome Zurabashvili. And it was actually Nino Bourjanadze who was against that, and the negotiation was, well, okay, the president then will be able to grant that on a case-by-case basis, but if you have another citizenship, you automatically lose your Georgian citizenship, is the law. The easy way to solve this would just be to say Georgians can be dual citizens, the way it is in practice in the United States. It doesn't say that in law, but for the last 40 years, the U.S. has just said anybody can be a dual citizen and we don't care.
Yeah, I think the practice is now if you, and that's what Bidzina's problem was, that if you're a Georgian citizen and you then get a foreign citizenship on top of that, you need to tell the Georgian government and let them know.
Well, and you have to, and my understanding is you have to reapply. Your Georgian citizenship is canceled. You are no longer a Georgian citizen, and you have to then request again. And so the president will then decide whether or not you get Georgian citizenship, which is to have the president grant citizenship is a little messed up. I mean, it's the kind of thing that you ought to have a right to by law. Following up on last week's story about Batumi Mayor Cemal Ananidze, who submitted his resignation, Batumi City Council did not satisfy the statement, and according to their decision, he remains in his post of Batumi Mayor. Check out TI Georgia's new online procurement monitoring platform, tendermonitor.ge. The site provides the public with an in-depth look at government spending by making detailed information about state procurement available to everyone.
Georgia has probably the best and most transparent electronic procurement system in the world. And so there's really a big chunk of the Georgian economy. Basically, most of the stuff the Georgian government buys is procured through one. It's kind of like an eBay of Georgia, where the government says how much they want to spend, and then companies can bid down the price. The official platform is pretty good, but it doesn't really allow you to get the big picture. And so we're sucking down all that information from the official website, and on TenderMonitor.ge, you can look at all the companies that win contracts, you can look at the procuring entities, you can, if you're a businessman, you can sign up for alerts. You know, if you're selling copper wire, then you can set up and you can register and kind of sign up for an email alert, and you will get notified whenever a government entity buys copper wire. I hope it's going to be a useful tool. And there's a significant chunk of procurement last year was outside this electronic platform, and a lot of this was done because the president or the government, by decree, created an exemption from the transparent procurement process. And this is something that we're looking into. All these secret contracts are also published on the state procurement agency's website, but it's actually very hard to dig through that because it's a lot of information. They published the contracts from like, the past 7 years or something like that.
Hmm.
So lots of interesting stuff out there, but nobody has successfully analyzed them yet.
On Thursday, the UN General Assembly passed Georgia's resolution on the rights of return of all displaced persons and refugees to Abkhazia and South Ossetia. The resolution, which is a non-binding document, was approved by 62 countries, 16 countries opposed it, and 84 abstained. A Nigerian student, Timothy Ida from Kutaisi State University, talks about racist behavior when he asked a stranger in Tbilisi for directions. Timothy was speaking Georgian with a guy. When the man began swearing at him, he asked a policeman to help him, but the police officer didn't do anything. The Nigerian student had to leave the place without any help from anyone because of racism. The Bagrati Cathedral has been removed from UNESCO's list of World Cultural Heritage after it underwent restoration. The Galati Cathedral and historic locations in Mscheta remained on the list. So for those of you who are not paying attention, the Bagrati Cathedral sort of had no roof and was, I mean, it
outside Kutaisi.
Outside Kutaisi, above Kutaisi. Yeah, really beautiful place. And it's in the Eldar Shengelaya movie, Unusual Exhibition, has a scene there. And it was really quite beautiful. And the whole thing was just plastered over by Misha.
With support of the church, because the church said we don't have enough churches that we can use.
So. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was real, and it's now, in my view, really quite ugly. I mean, it's just, you can't tell it's an old church. It's you know, architecturally the same, but all been plastered over, which is too bad. And UNESCO was talking about this all along, and the previous government didn't really care so much about it. I mean, the problem is that before, certainly, I think a lot of people saw it. It was well known. It was, you know, people would go there. Now it's another big church, of which there are quite a few. The Patriarch of Georgia addressed Parliamentary Speaker Datu Subashvili about the Patriarch's private broadcasting channel, Etzulov Neba, which was turned off. Since 2007, the TV network had an agreement with TV Evrika that had been buying its frequency from them. On May 1st, 2013, the contract expired and the channel moved to cable broadcasting, which is available to only 40% of the population. According to the statement by the Regulatory Commission, it has no frequency, but Ilya II asked the parliament to charge the commission to find some additional frequency for Ertzulov Neba.
It was kind of a funny statement from the Patriarch. It was kind of, I think, a Soviet-style thinking argument. Like, they said, we know that there is no frequency for us, but we want you to give it to us. Basically.
Yeah. And I wonder why Usupashvili, you know? I mean, why not the Prime Minister? Or why not the President, you know? I mean, is the parliamentary oversight of the Broadcast Commission?
Yes, that I don't know if that's the sophisticated way of thinking. But,
right. Basil Kalivashvili, Georgian Orthodox priest, wacko and leader of the Basilist breakaway sect in Guldani, demanded that the Patriarch raid a Jehovah's Witnesses Congress, which will be held on the 22nd of June in Tbilisi. U.S. Embassy and Georgian Finance Ministry agreed to intensify cooperation to protect intellectual property in Georgia. The ministry stated the government agencies have held negotiations with Microsoft and the U.S. Embassy aimed at bringing software usage in full compliance with license requirements. The ministry said that according to Business Software Alliance, the rate of illegal software use in Georgia is 90%.
This Business Software Alliance is basically kind of an industry body for software cooperation.
Yeah, of course.
And I think that the number has significantly gone down in recent years of illegal software use. Because like 3 years ago, there was not even a store where you could buy legal Microsoft products in this country.
Yeah.
So I think the situation has improved. But.
Yeah, I have very mixed feelings about this with software and Microsoft. I mean, fair enough. You know, I mean, I understand that. But you know, in the waning days of the national movement, there was some lepel that was created in the 11-story building on Heroes Square, from which they'd send out people. To charge restaurants for playing the radio. They'd come by and say, oh, well, you know, or you sometimes not playing the radio, playing a CD or whatever else. I mean, it was really quite ridiculous. I said, what if you have a person playing a guitar there, you know, just playing some music, and says, well, but it would be copyright and whatever else. And one of the restaurants, I clued them into Creative Commons music that's not copywritten, and they were still charged, you know, because the people didn't have any idea what Creative Commons music was. So, I mean, in this era when the U.S. Congress is essentially, you know, saying with the Bono Amendment of 99 years for, you know, for trademark and things like that, I you know, worry that of this getting out of control.
Yeah, but I think the government switched largely to more, you know, authentic software because they realized it's a big cyber, it makes them very vulnerable to cyber attacks.
Right.
And they experienced that in 2008, you know. Like, so they realized that not having original software. Yeah.
Well, the other option would be the Brazil choice and just say that the government goes open source and that, you know, every all the software that the government uses should be that way, run on Linux and whatever else, which would do wonders for Georgia's programming, you know, abilities. The renovation of the former funicular restaurant building overlooking Tbilisi from Tatsminda is complete. The new complex includes several areas with cafe, confectionery shop, and restaurants. Complex will be officially opened on the 29th of June. The historic funicular building was originally built between 1936 and 1938, and it is considered an architectural monument of the city.
And it has been running for a few months now, and then
Yeah. And everybody should take it. It's nice. You can get up there quite easily. It means that you just walk to the thing and then, you know, buy a ticket and then head up.
But the nicer way is, of course, to take the path up there behind the church and then up to the TV tower. It's
right.
A very nice, romantic walk.
Yes, for those sportivni of you. Since the 15th of June, the seasonal passenger train between Yerevan and Batumi has resumed its trip. It will go through October 15th. On the 13th of June, the acclaimed theater and film director Gigalor Kipanidze passed away at the age of 86. Director was admitted to Republic Hospital in Tbilisi with breathing difficulties. He was the author of more than 100 theater productions and 4 movies, including Data Tutashkia. In 1996, he was awarded the Order of Honor of Georgia. On Friday, Georgian students organized a live chain of academic solidarity against amendments to the law on higher education. The human chain stretched along the road from the building of Ilia State University to TSU's first building. Later, the students held a rally in front of the Ministry of Education. The Minister of Education, Georgi Margvelashvili, noted that protesters should analyze the deeper changes in the educational system. Though this expression, he noted, was part of democracy.
Well, the deeper changes in the education system is that the prime minister is now able to hire and fire the deans of universities.
Yeah, which is appalling. I mean, there's a lot of things that are bad about this. One is the independence aspect. Now, not that the universities were so completely independent under Misha, but the the control that was exercised was informal, you know, and appointing allies in positions and replacing them and this and that was informal and needed to be organized. And so theoretically, the universities could push back. Now, not so much. But what was really appalling, and what I noticed the U.S. Embassy commented on specifically, was this went too quickly. The fact that it was done under emergency procedures was really bad. And as we've mentioned before, there were a number of important people that didn't vote or abstained or left the room. And so Misha has said that he intends to use his veto on this, which is good. And there are a lot of people within the opposition, especially among the Republicans, that are pleased that he's going to veto it because it'll make it difficult to override.
Right, and I mean, this is something that we have seen over the past few weeks, that, you know, the overly powerful president is now replaced by an extremely powerful prime minister who, by himself, you know, appoints the energy regulator, can, you know, hire and fire the deans of universities. And, I mean, in reality, Vizina will not, or the prime minister does not have time to make all these decisions by himself and, you know, to pay a lot of attention to everything.
Right.
So I think it would result in very powerful close advisors to him who would,
right,
you know, he just signs off on their decisions.
Yeah. So according to the amendments submitted to Parliament last week, nominees for the post of rector should have a PhD or equal academic degree. Why that needs to be specified, nobody knows, but the main reason is that the current, until recently, the rector, Sandro Kvitashvili, did not have a PhD, which was the cause for, a big hullabaloo. But he resigned a few days ago.
Yeah, but also there's no, it's like an immediate, it goes into effect immediately, basically. It's not right. That in 5 or 7 years from now,
right.
So that universities could, you know, transition, I mean, and that people could get a PhD if they want to pursue,
I mean,
a...
This whole thing started, this is completely personal, that, you know, whatever reason this has to do with Ivanishvili and Mark Vilashvili and Sandro Kvitashvili, and they just said, we just feel like doing this because we're ticked off about something, some meeting they held or whatever else, and so we're going to do this, and that's bad. Parliament approved the 2012 budget performance report. Parliamentary revenue was 7.2 billion lari, 99.4% of the budgetary revenue target. Expenditures were 97.3% of the targeted 6.8 billion. Lari having been spent. Constitutional amendments have been initiated by 72 members of parliament to allow a person with dual citizenship to become president, prime minister, or parliamentary speaker. It's currently not legal under the constitution.
Well, and again, to my best knowledge, Vizina is not a Georgian citizen. He's only a French citizen.
Right. Misha put an initiative before Parliament which would increase monetary awards to people with the Order of National Hero from $5,000 to $15,000 and give them allowances equivalent to the salaries of ministers. In addition, like people awarded the David Agma Shenabeli and Bakhtang Gorgatsali orders, people with the Order of National Hero would have allowances for public transportation and state health insurance. Their deceased, their next of kin would receive the benefits. Parliament of Georgia adopted amendments to the labor code, which would require citizens who've worked for over 30 months to sign an open-ended contract with their employer. This week, we have three memes for you. Head of the Parliament's Human Rights Committee, Eka Beselia, came under fire on social networks after she instructed her committee to investigate whether 12,000 signatures in the a petition about these events were real or fake, and she said that some of them were fake.
About the May 17 protests, and people signed a petition asking the government to hold those responsible accountable.
Exactly. People have been posting photos of themselves which show their own number on the list of signatures under the slogan, Defend Your Signature. A quote from Beselia, quote, "The committee also takes into consideration that the Georgian Patriarch demanded the restriction of the right to assembly and demonstrate, not generally for a group of people of a different sexual orientation, but they were against the assembly because of its aim."
Yeah. She's a human rights lawyer.
Yeah, this is just really just maddening because, first of all, it was an anti- homophobia, pro-tolerance demonstration. And it was not, you know, the portrayal of it is sort of, you know, everybody throwing their gayness in front of the faces of the Georgian public was ridiculous. The whole thing was about tolerance. And it's just unbelievable that she would make a quote like that and still occupy that position.
But it's also fun to see the backlash. So our own friend Will Dunbar has posted a very nice picture of his chocha in London.
Absolutely,
on a balcony.
Yeah.
He has a sword, and he has like
put a hanjal, no less, with his number through the piece of paper. You can tell by the cars being on the wrong side of the street that he's actually in London on a balcony. That's a great, great photograph that's been much reposted.
Yeah. And there's a Facebook group with lots of cool people, you know, kind of in a creative way showing that their signature was authentic.
Exactly. Meme number two, a video of participants of a recent gay pride parade in Vienna is dressed like a Georgian priest and walks with a rainbow-colored stool, satirizing the Georgian priest who chased gay activists with a taburetka on May 17th in Tbilisi. We don't know who this Viennese taburetka guy is, but we like him a lot, so if anyone wants to let us know, let us know. Meme number three, based on three surveys conducted in 2010, Jumpstart Georgia investigated what women, men, and doctors in Georgia know about family planning and contraception methods.
Not enough,
yes. And, I mean, it is the lack of knowledge or use of contraception that is directly responsible for Georgia's high abortion rate. Results visualized in the infographic indicate that not all methods of contraception are well known among Georgian women. 21% of Georgian men are not aware of the contraception method that their partner uses, and 88.4% of doctors would like to know more about family planning methods.
There were also, I think, 15% of doctors think that abortion is like legitimate and normal contraceptive.
Yeah, not so good. Need some work there. Things to read. Russia's President Vladimir Putin spoke with Russia Today about the world's burning issues, including Syria, Iran, U.S. surveillance, terrorism, and Russian-Georgian relations. It's quite interesting. He answered questions from RT journalists, including Sopo Shevardnadze, while paying a visit to the channel. An article that we mentioned before by Yulia Latinina in the Moscow Times is called Putin's Fantasies About Georgian Terrorists. New report by TI Georgia about Georgian e-procurement platform titled Assessment of Georgia's e-procurement system. Tedo Chapadidze's article is called The New York Times Picks an Easy Target, which criticizes the New York Times coverage of Georgian soldiers in Afghanistan. It's really a good article. It's on, what do you call it, Open Democracy, and it's worth the
freedom. But yeah. I thought it was a stupid article, because he claims that... I mean, yes, you can, you know, say it, maybe it was not very thoughtful by the New York Times reporter to, you know, be very critical of the performance of the Georgian soldiers according to one or two sources that are not identified. But then he also says, you know, like, he kind of hints that this is like a complot and that they suppress, like, criticism, but he didn't even apparently try to write a letter to the editor and, you know, or an op-ed for the New York Times and say, you're wrong, this is... What we're actually doing there.
Well,
he just like complains.
I don't know that he didn't write the letter to the New York Times. I mean, we don't really know that. And maybe the New York Times would only give him 300 words and he wanted 800 words. I have no idea. But I think that his point was that there was criticism of the Georgian soldiers and how they're perceived by foreigners, by the Afghans. I haven't read that a whole lot about Americans. I mean, when American soldiers are killed or when Dutch soldiers are killed, you don't hear like, well, you know, the Dutch soldiers, you know, they were a bunch of jerks and, you know, were always going around doing X, Y, Z, you know. And why do the Georgians get that? Plus, nobody talked about the Georgians themselves, what they were doing. There was no background on the Georgian soldiers, the role that they played, about them individually. I mean, and it was just sort of... I mean, I think the emphasis was that it was sort of the fact that they're Georgians, they're kind of weird, and we don't know anything about that. And so, you know, well, what do the Afghans have to say about mm-hmm. that? And so little of the coverage of Western European or American soldiers ever talks about how the locals perceive
right.
them. And I thought it was a fair point.
Yeah. But I saw the I think the U.S. ambassador, the Georgian ambassador to the U.S. Had a short letter to the editor in the New York Times about that.
And then there was also Ted Salukiani's, of course, letter about the Washington Post thing. I think
and
we mentioned
Alassane is quoted by Tavula as saying that that there's kind of an information attack against Georgia, naming the New York Times article and the video.
Yeah,
video, which was like really like two very different.
I mean, I think there is a bit of a paranoia among the Otsneba team that it's kind of they feel like the sort of machinations of Misha's people are sort of creating this onslaught of criticism, and frankly, they ought to just relax. You know, I mean, a few Republican congressmen getting together and, firing off some little, thing. Nobody cares. I mean, it's really not a big deal. It's just like a few MEPs saying, it's just not that important, and they'd be better served to just,
Ignore it,
really, and just work on getting out their message. And also, there's a great one on Facebook, is a tool against homophobia on Eurasianet by Gheorghe Lomsadze. These are all, the links will all be posted on our forum. This week's geocapital number is 7, which is the number of tons of nitrogen fertilizer used in Georgia per 1,000 hectares of agricultural land. Nitrogen is the nutrient most often used in fertilizers, the other being potash and phosphate. Just to give an idea, 1,000 hectares is approximately 1,500 football fields, while a ton is 1,000 kilos. Armenia uses 5 tons of nitrogen fertilizer per 1,000 hectares of agricultural land, compared to 36 for Turkey and 6 for Russia and Azerbaijan. The United States uses 27 tons per 1,000 hectares, while Germans are at 92 tons and the Dutch are at 109 tons. The list is topped by Singapore at 9,666 tons per 1,000 hectares of agricultural land.
Singapore has like a park of 70 square meters and somebody like dumped a bag of nitrogen there.
Well, is there any agricultural land at all? Are parks agricultural land? I don't know. A good question. So low fertilizer use in the case of Georgia can have several reasons. It can be the case that farmers are poor or uneducated, don't buy the fertilizer, don't have the money, but it may be possible that the soil conditions are such that very little nitrogen fertilizer is needed. Different crops also require different amounts of fertilizer. Any insights welcomed? Comment on fieldpod.com's forum. Simon, of course, we're waiting to hear from you. Anybody else?
Especially in the fertilizer, we need some guidance.
Exactly, yeah. We don't really know too much about fertilizer. So this week's English language program at the Rooster Valley Movie Theater across from Parliament is again on Saturday, June 22nd, Hangover 3 at 6:05 p.m. Tickets are 10 Lottie and 50 Tetri. No Kolga movies this week. This afternoon, the European Alumni Association of Georgia, which is a membership organization in Georgia for those who attended or taught at a university in Europe for one semester or more, we'll hold a founding assembly today at 6:30 at Europe House on Freedom Square. The European Alumni Association of Georgia aims to promote, inform, and exchange information between Georgia and the EU. For information, visit the Facebook page, www.facebook.com/EAAGeorgia. The 13th International Exhibition of Medical Technology, Laboratory Equipment, Stomatology, Pharmaceutics and Optics, Caucasus Healthcare 2013, and the 8th International Exhibition of Cosmetics, Tbilisi Beauty and Aesthetic Medicine 2013, will be held at the Tbilisi National Exhibition Center Expo, Georgia, from the 20th to the 23rd of June. The address is 118 Sedatelli Avenue in Didube. Next week, on the 26th of June, Wednesday at 6:15, Works in Progress will host Viad Diasamidze and Dustin Galbraith, with the talk entitled "The Reproduction of Radical Transitions in Georgia Since Independence." The lecture will take place at Zandukeli number 16 at the ISET CRC building just above McDonald's. That's it for this week. My Twitter address is at TXTBUK. Our email address is tbilpod@gmail.com. Or post to the forum on our website at www.tbilpod.com. And from 1963, we'll finish with Heartbreak Hotel from Chet Atkins.